Hello, everyone. Slightly different one there. It's just me this time, Alex. The short end of it all is that, no, nothing happened between Brett and I. We're still great friends, and we still want to continue doing stuff. But I had some things happen IRL this month that weren't particularly fun. I don't really want to get into it, right now at least. But that meant that recording or really engaging with Magic, so I haven't seen many of the spoilers before the entire set was released for Murder at Karlov Manor. Which I'm probably going to keep calling Castle Markov very frequently, which I know is in a different location. Different plane in the multiverse, really. But, yeah, I just haven't really been able to get time to record, time to engage with Magic once. Which was the stuff that happened IRL was worse. But in terms of Magic, you know, the past few sets, I haven't been super enthusiastic about them at the end. Where I feel like this set is really cool. So I want to talk about this set. This is sort of going to be like a backup content-y thing. If Brad and I just don't manage to get a recording in, this is something we may release. So I could be talking into the void right now and no one will ever hear it. But my main focus when I play Magic now is Pioneer and EDH. But I also just like to sort of theory craft about cards anyway, and usually have to condense to a top 10 and keep to a time schedule, but because it's just sort of me, and this is sort of like my episode, quote unquote, I'm just gonna talk about cards that I like from the set, which means the focus will probably be Pioneer and be EDH, but I might just get off topic, talk about other things, talk about Modern, talk about Kitchen Table, like whatever, right? So let's just get into it, really. You know, I don't need to give too long of an intro. And the way I've done this is, again, these are just cards I like. I think I ended up with 33 cards, if my Word document is to be believed. They're on screen, so if we manage to upload the visuals for this podcast, that'll be great. But I have done them in alphabetical order and order of color. So again, they're not a top 10. This is just cards I like. But I thought that would also make it easier for people to read along. If you have the card image gallery open, these should all be in order at which they appear in the card image gallery. And I will also just be reading out the text like I usually do. And there may be a few more awkward silences this time. Because I need breathing breaks. And I am someone who talks fast. And I haven't been able to go to the gym this month either, so my stamina is even worse than it usually is. So, and I don't know how to edit. Brad always does this. So if he cuts out any awkward pauses, that works. But I think if we end up doing this, I'm just going to have to send the whole thing to Brad in one go. So it's going to be a little scrappy, but I felt really bad for, like, you know, we do this whole rebranding thing and then we just go MIA for 2 months. So that's what this is for. So without more skibbity-bop, let's just get into talking about Murder at Karlov Manor. Again, I'm going to say it wrong a lot, I'm sure. So the first card that I want to talk about is Assemble the Players. This is a 2-mana enchantment, 1 and a white, and it says, you may look at the top card of your library at any time. Once each turn, you may cast a creature spell with power 2 or less from the top of your library. Now, I've seen a little bit of buzz about this card, so I wanted to mention it, but this would probably go into, like, my overrated section or whatever, because I kind of feel like this is a bad card. It kind of reads like, quote-unquote, draw a card each turn, but it's really not, because in your average Magic deck, only about half your cards are spells. So, a little over half your cards are spells. So, even if every spell in your deck meets this requirement, it's draw a card every other turn for 2 mana, and I feel like we've just moved beyond cards like this. We have a card that's seen occasional play. It's not called Trostani's Welcome, but it is similar. It is from Brothers War. It is a 3-mana enchantment, and it just says, whenever a creature with power 3 or less enters the battlefield, draw a card. You can do this once each turn. This only triggers once each turn. So that's 3 mana, but it does basically draw you a card every turn. And it doesn't rely on the top of your library. You can flash things in, like that scene playing Spirits, because you can basically draw a card on every player's turn, where Assemble the Players basically only triggers on your turn. So I feel like this is just like a much worse version of a card we already have, and occasionally sees play. So I don't see why that card would no longer see play in Faith in order to make this card see play. The next card is Case of the Uneaten Feast. This is a case, so this is a new type of enchantment. And basically what the case does is it has a passive effect, then it has a way to solve the case, which is you have to meet a certain requirement. And if you have met that requirement on your end step, the case will now count as solved. And then sort of the third saga chapter, they look like sagas, is a thing you can do once you've solved it. So Case of the Uneaten Feast says, whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain one life. Now, this is Ajani's Welcome. Now, Ajani's Welcome isn't a great card. In life gain decks, in Standard, it was a player at a time. I remember playing some Orcs of Life Gain deck that ran it. You know, it's a typical 1-2 that you play this on one, and then your Ajani's Pride Maid is immediately a 3-3. However, I'm talking about Ajani's Welcome now. This card does more. So, again, one and a white, whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain a life. However, to solve, you've gained 5 or more life this turn. Could be from anything. It doesn't have to be from this card's effect. And when it's solved, you can sacrifice this case, and it says, creature cards in your graveyard gain, you may cast this card from your graveyard until end of turn. So you kind of Pest and Flames your graveyard for creatures. Now, Ajani's Welcome isn't a great card, but this card is the literal same card, and then it is just this random reanimation. Well, it's not reanimation, but this sort of like graveyard value thing on top, which is really great for the sort of like Ajani's Pride Maid, whatever the 3-mana flying Ajani's Pride Maid is. Blood-soaked Aerialist, I believe. It's just, those decks are kind of bad against board wipes because you don't really want to overextend. And this just makes it so you're suddenly like great. You're suddenly like fairly resistant to board wipes. I don't know if this is good enough. It gives me sort of Invasion of Gobakan vibes. If like you're thinking like works against your opponent. It's obviously Invasion is a little bit disruptive, but they're both white enchantments. They feel like, but Invasion of Gobakan feels like a sideboard card where this could be a main deck card for a life gain deck. So I think if you're playing a life gain-ish deck, this is probably a very good card. I just don't think life gain decks aren't as good. Obviously in Commander, this is kind of great. Because if you're playing a life gain deck in Commander, Commander is a format where board wipes happen a lot. So having this sort of like one-off free board wipe recovery, quote unquote, I think is just a really good card. Then we have Case of the Gateway Express. Another case, one in a white. When this enters the battlefield, choose target creature you don't control. Each creature you control deals 1 damage to that creature. So basically, you deal damage to an opponent's creature equal to the amount of creatures you control. With a few exceptions, the creature itself deals damage, so Death Touch applies, Lifelink applies, those sort of things. Wither applies, that's a thing in this set. And then to solve, 3 or more creatures attack this turn. And the solved is creatures you control get +1/+0. Now, when I initially read this card, I completely skipped over the thing that cases only solve on your end step. So if you play this card and immediately attack with 3 creatures, that doesn't mean that you get to immediately have those creatures have increased power. That is only on your next turn. So that's kind of shitty about it. But in a token deck or in, I mean, I'm thinking like a Boros Convoke-ish, right? Which goes pretty wide. Really easy to solve. Pretty good payoff when you've solved it. And it's a way to get removal in your deck that still contributes to your game plan. So in that way, I feel like Case of the Gateway Express is actually a pretty good card. Well, this is the easiest evaluation of all time. Novice Inspector. It's a white for Thraven Inspector. I believe Thraven Inspector is a human soldier, and this is a human detective. Other than that, it's the literal same card. 1 mana for a 1-2 ETB investigate. This is just a super good card. Three-man Inspector has always been a good card. Novice Inspector is going to be great. This could mean that... well, Convoke decks, they kind of like their red mana for their Gleeful Demolition. But if you think back to Standard, you could have like this Artifact aggro deck that went Toolcraft Exemplar into Thraben Inspector to have the artifact. Now you can do that. Now you have a lot of more of these cards in white. So you may not have to go into red, and it could enable you to do that artifact aggro strategy in other colors. Even though like Voldaren Epicure has kind of become a staple of those type of decks. But now Novice Inspector means there's enough white that maybe you can head into like Azorius or Celestnia or something like that. So yeah, very good card. Human. This is probably going to show up in quite a few places. Then we have Doorkeeper Thrall. Doorkeeper Thrall is a one and a white for a 1/2 flash flying Thrall. And it says artifacts and creatures entering the battlefield don't cause abilities to trigger. Now, we have a lot of variations of this card. We have one that works for, I believe, for enchantments. We have one that works from the graveyard. And they always all count creatures, right? They're all just different flavors of the same card. Tokatli Honor Guard, for example, only works with creatures and doesn't fly and doesn't have flash, but it is a human, so there's a relevant creature type. Hushwing Griff, I believe, this is kind of just better than Hushwing Griff. I'm pretty sure Hushwing Griff is just a 3-mana 2/1 that doesn't work on artifacts. Hushwing Griff, we're doing it live. And Wise Words, no, that man never had Wise Words. Yeah, that is a 3-mana 2/1 flash flying with creatures entering the battlefield don't cause abilities to trigger. This is cheaper, and it also works on artifacts. So I don't know if this card is like immediately going to be a good card. I can see it being very nasty in EDH. But mainly, this is just there because it's just one of the versions of it. I do genuinely think this is one of the better ones. Especially depending on what sort of like artifacts entering a battlefield you're going to see. You know, this could be flashed in response to like a Portable Hole or a Glass Casket to just like deny your opponent removal, which can be nice. It can work against like a Torrential Gearhulk, that sort of effect. Because the flash is just really good, and before you needed to run a 3-mana card for it, now you have a 2-mana card of it, and I think this effect with flash is super strong. It's kind of like a counterspell. Then we have another... Fuck, man, this set is so wordy. Gonna need to have a drink. Good heavens. We have Case of the Filched Falcon. So it is 1 blue for a case, and when it enters the battlefield, investigate. To solve, you control 3 or more artifacts. And if it is solved, it gains the ability, 2 and a blue, sack this case, put 4/1/1 counters on a non-token non-creature artifact. It becomes a 0/0 bird with flying, in addition to its other types. So, the last effect and the to solve and all these things I don't think are super relevant. What I think is good about this card is that you're paying 1 blue mana and you're getting both an enchantment and an artifact. You know, Magic in the past few years has become a lot about, it's become a lot about just putting stuff on the battlefield. I always remember Brian Gottlieb was talking about like the strength of your deck is basically based on how many game actions you take. It doesn't really matter what the game actions are. If you just take a lot of game actions, your deck is probably good. And this deck feels like it's in that vein. What is it like the... Is it Flood of Tears that, for example, like needs you to bounce a certain amount of cards? Let me have a quick look. Yeah, that is about non-token permanents, but still, this could be 1 mana, and then you second to draw a card, and then you bounce this with your Flood of Tears. There's all the cards from Kamigawa, Neon Dynasty, that rely on having an enchantment and an artifact into play, and this immediately meeting that requirement is great. I believe this is how Bargain works. I am very well prepared for this. I think Bargain, yeah, it's sacrifice an artifact, enchantment, or a token. So this is 1 mana to have 2 cards that you could bargain away. And I think that's just going to be the good good thing in this deck. It's a typical role player card. It's just gonna enable something. There's all kind of flavor text. Like, sure. I mean, it does make it a 4-4 flyer, so occasionally you're just gonna beat someone to death with a flying clue token. But I don't think it's why you run this card. But it's an upside to running this card. The next card, and this is one of the cards that really made me feel like, man, I wish I had like more hours in a day. So this month I could have spent making a cool deck with this card. It is Conspiracy Unraveler. So it is a 7-mana card. It is 5 blue-blue for a 6/6 Sphinx Detective. And it has flying. And it says, it's a new set mechanic on this. It says, you may collect evidence 10 rather than pay the mana cost for spells that you cast. And collect evidence 10 means exile cards with a total mana value of 10 or greater from your graveyard. So basically, you play this, there's an Omniscience in your graveyard, which is 10 mana. You just exile that Omniscience and then you play the Omniscience from your hand for free. And that's basically immediately where my mind went. Like, I feel like you want to build a deck with Conspiracy Unraveler, that you cast Conspiracy Unraveler and you win the game. You know, you may take some extra turns. You may just immediately drop an Omniscience and just win with that, right? This basically just becomes a 7-mana Omniscience. If you're doing some extra turn stuff, this is a 6/6 flying, so it only takes a couple turns for this to be lethal. Which is really cool about it. We're going to talk about a card like right at the end that might go quite well with this, which I know makes the order awkward, but otherwise I'm going to mess up the format. Yeah, I'm just thinking maybe you have this in play and like a discard outlet in play, and you cast an Enter the Infinite for free, you draw your entire deck, and now you can discard cards to cast cards. You're kind of like, discard plus a discard outland is kind of like make your own dream hall. And that's like the type of, that's where my mind goes with this card. This is an incredibly unfair card. And if you build a deck with this card, your aim should be to cast Conspiracy Unraveler and immediately win the game. Then we have a card that I just want to highlight, which is, I think, is really cool, but I don't think it's good enough. It's the Deuce. It's 1 and a blue. Instant, draw a card, investigate. So it's kind of a 4-mana draw 2, but you get to break it up, which sounds really good. But then I do think like Behold the Multiverse also kind of does that. It can't be discarded, so it can be like really good, sort of a really good way to like prevent yourself from ever being empty-handed against a discard deck. And which I guess this does too, because it is a clue. But you know, a clue isn't as good as my backup is Scry 2, Draw 2. So I don't think this card is good enough. I know we had Quick Study in like 2 sets ago and it would immediately power creep that, but I just really wish this was a 1-mana card, right? 1-mana draw card, investigate. I think that would be a very good card. I don't think it would be too good, but I think it'd be very good. So I can see why they didn't do it. But especially with that and Quick Study at the same time, could be like enable a really nasty control deck in standard, especially with like my most hated card from the set, which we'll talk about towards the end. But I mainly wanted to talk about this card because I think this was around when Eldraine released. I brought up that I really hate the fact that control decks don't really get to play this, like what I talked about earlier, the like having a bunch of stuff, taking a bunch of game actions kind of gameplay. Like when Bargain came out, I was like, this mechanic is really cool, but as a control player, at least primarily a control player, I don't really see myself casting Bargain cards. Because what am I going to sacrifice? What enchantment am I going to have into play? What tokens am I going to have into play? And a card like the Deuce allows you to partake in that game. Right? I can deduce, have a clue token, and instead of sacking it for a draw, I could sack it to torch the tower for more damage in a scry. Like, I get to play that game now with a card called like the Deuce. So that's what I really like about this card. But other than that, I don't think it's quite good enough. But maybe the more cards we're gonna get, like with effects like Bargain, the more value a card like Deduce is going to get. Even though there's probably still better cards for this. Yeah, this is really a card where I was like, bitches at Wizard, you should have made it a 4-mana card. Have the balls. It is Intrude on the Mind. 3 blue-blue for an instant. Reveal the top 5 cards of your library and separate them into 2 piles. An opponent chooses one of those piles. That goes into your hand, the other pile goes into your graveyard. Then you get a 0-0 Thopter and put a 1-1 counter on it for each card that was put into your graveyard this way. So the easy explanation is, you look at 5 cards. Let's say I make a pile of 3 and a pile of 2. My opponent chooses pile 2, that goes to my hand, that means I get a 3-3 Thopter. If they would have put the 3 cards in my hand and the 2 cards into the graveyard, I would have had a 2-2 Thopter. Now, I kind of hate the fact that your opponent gets to pick. I think even at 5 mana, this card would have been like really cool if your opponent made the piles and then you picked. But now we are looking at a draw spell that if there's a card that you're really looking for, like let's say you're really digging for that board wipe, your opponent can just choose not to give it to you. And I think for like a thing that card draw spells sort of have to do, like if I'm really looking for a board wipe and I would pick, my opponent would probably give me a pile that is a board wipe and 4 cards. And then I pick the board wipe, I get a 4-4, but it doesn't matter because it's going to die to the board wipe. So you'd still have those mind games, but I feel like the card would at least be playable. We've seen more of these. There's the, like, is it Hostile Negotiations from Brothers War? That was also like a Factor of Fiction-y card, but I think that made you lose 3 life and that just made it kind of bad. I feel like they keep doing this now. Like, they give us really cool card draw spells, Factor of Fiction-y kind of spells that are super cool and really skill intensive, but then they just kind of don't make them good enough. So I wish this card was a little better. 4 mana would have been really cool, but it may have been too good. Mainly, I, again, would have just flipped who gets to pick. Like, I wish my opponent made the piles, and then I got to pick the card from the pile, rather than I make the pile and get my opponent to pick. Because that feels very like it's only good at being a win more card. The next card is really cool. It is a Forensic... I mean, it could be A. There's probably more of them. A Forensic Gadgeteer. It is 2 in the blue for a 2-3 Vedalken Artificer Detective. And whenever you cast an artifact, investigate. Artifact spell. Activated abilities of artifacts you control cost 1 less to activate. This can't reduce the mana cost to less than 1 mana. So, like, you can sack clues for 1 mana. But a blood would still only be sacked for 1 mana. That wouldn't become 0. I think map tokens also sack for 1. So even in standard, that synergy's not there either. But what I think is really cool about this card is this is just like Psy or Saheeli, but you get clues instead of Thopters or Servos. Now, I played a Paradoxical Outcome deck that ran both Psy and Saheeli, and in that deck that I think just ran 4 of each because you kind of needed to have both in play to really pop off. It was quite hard to do with one of them. But obviously if you run a play set of 2 legendaries, sometimes you just draw 2 Psy's, sometimes you draw 2 Saheeli's. But I could see that deck running like 3 of each and then 2 Forensic Gadgeteers so you don't have that awkwardness. Because that's the only deck I could really see this end up in. I don't really think like quote-unquote artifact storm you could ever make something fair out of that, like you're just gonna play a Paradoxical Outcome deck, right? But with that being said, this provides draw, which is like a good way to like fuel this deck, and it's not legendary, which is an upside and a downside, because that deck did use Mox Amber to make some of the mana it needed to like bridge the gap when comboing off. Like, you know, float bouncing your Mox Amber a few times and then drawing into your other Mox Ambers, legend ruling them and making like 4 or 5 mana is like the thing that then got you to cast a, the Aetherflux Reservoir. So this not being legendary does hinder that. Like, this would have been kind of ideal if it was like Bob Forensic Gadgeteer and it would have been a legendary too. But again, if you keep the numbers low, like if you run 3 Psy, 3 Saheeli, 2 Forensic Gadgeteer, the chance that you draw both your Gadgeteers is really low, but the chance that you get to draw Gadgeteer and then any of your other legendaries, which means you have a legendary from Mox Amber anyway, is great. Given that this isn't legendary, I think you can use Saheeli to make one of your tokens into a copy of this. I don't know why you would need to get three artifacts whenever you cast one. Two is probably enough, but it could be good enough. It could be cool. Then we have Reenact the Crime. One blue, so four mana for an instant. And it says, exile target non-land card in a graveyard that was put there from anywhere this turn. You may cast a copy without paying its mana cost. Now, the first thing I thought about was a few earlier, was Conspiracy Unraveler. Right? I was talking about you want to combo your Conspiracy Unraveler with a free discard outlet in order to fuel it. Now, let's say I can't think of the top of my head of a card that makes you discard a card at will. Golgari Grave Troll. No, not Golgari Grave Troll. But it's the other troll. It's a Golgari card. It can regenerate that one, but that's a free discard outlet. Now, let's say you play that on turn 2. Then on turn 3, you do something. I don't know, you play Magic the Gathering cards. And on turn 4, you discard the Sphinx and then reanimate it with React to Crime. And because it's a non-land card, so it could be other things. I mean, if you play that deck, you discard your Omniscience and then reenact the crime it into play. If you have like a really good card in your hand, your opponent thought seizes you and you also have reenact the crime, well, they're either going to take the reenact the crime or they're going to take the card, but then you just reenact the crime that card. So I think this card is really good. I don't know if it's good enough because I feel like it's a bit convoluted, but the card is super powerful. So you can do really strong effects with this. You can also just punish opponents with this, right? Your opponent goes for the Fable of the Mirror Breaker on turn 3, and then on turn 4, they discard like the Shieldred because you already have 3 in hand. You're like, okay, cool, reenact the crime. I would like that Shieldred, please. Especially because you don't need to do it immediately. So let's say your opponent does that thing and they discard their Shieldred and then they play a Shieldred and then they go and attack with the Goblin token. Well, you may not want to do it then because of Fatal Push, but anyway, in theory, you could then, in combat, take their Shieldred, block their Shaman, go to your turn, you now have a Shieldred in play. This also works if you counter one of your opponent's cards, right? I counter a card that my opponent plays and now I would like to have it, please. And you reenact the crime. Now, there have been cards before that just, like, you counter a spell and then you get to cast it yourself. So it may feel kind of weak in that way. But what I think is very good about it is that now you can break it up. So I can have a 2-mana counter spell, and then if I happen to be at 6 mana, I get to reenact the crime the card. Otherwise, I need to wait for a card to be discarded or anything. Obviously, this is the worst top deck of all time. So that's definitely an issue. But I still think this card's really good, or at least it is really fucking cool. Drink break. Then we have maybe one of my favorite arts in the set. By Sam Gwei, which isn't Rebecca Gay, obviously, because the Gay Gwei, I'm very sorry if I mispronounce, I'm just going to say Gay. Rebecca Gay. I believe Sam Gay is a student of Rebecca Gay, and they just happen to have the same last name, which is really funny. Which is also why they have a very similar style. But Deadly Cover-Up is a black sweeper. It is 3 black for a sorcery, and as an additional cost to cast this spell, you may collect evidence 6. So again, if you cast this spell, you can exile other cards from your graveyard with a total mana value of 6 or more, and if you do, you get this bonus effect that is on this card. So, if you don't collect it, all it does is destroy all creatures. Just 5 mana, Wrath of God. But, if evidence was collected, exile a card from an opponent's graveyard, then search its owner's graveyard, hand, and library for any number of cards with that name, that player shuffles, then draws a card for each card exiled from their hand this way. So, this is just an extraction effect, right? And what's so great about it doesn't have to be one of the destroyed cards. So let's say you're going against Phoenix and they have a Thing in the Ice and a Ledger Shredder in play, and there's a Phoenix in their graveyard. You're going to blow up the board and then exile the Phoenix, even though that wasn't one of the cards that died to this. Or you're against a Greasefang deck, you wipe their board, and you just take the Parhelion out of the graveyard. So I think this is like a really good way to get Extraction's effect into your main deck. I don't think you would ever put this, you'd ever port this in. Like, this is either your sweeper or you're not playing it. But 5 mana for a Wrath of God is not terrible in black. Like, black usually has conditional sweepers at 4, like Ritual of Soot or Languish or Extinction Event. Like, these, like, not catch-all sweepers. And then at 5, they get the catch-all sweepers. But even then, they don't have that many. So just having a catch-all sweeper in black is great. And then adding an Extraction effect on top of that, which now enables you to have that in your main deck. I mean, really, if your opponent has an empty board, you're against like a control mirror, just play this, exile a bunch of poop from your graveyard, and just use it as a 5-mana Extraction effect that's in your main deck. Like, I'm sure I'm going to do that at some point. So, yeah, I'm just very happy with this card. I think it's really great. Great art, awesome card. I know we're not allowed to get Damnation in black for some reason, but then give me this. Very happy with it. Next cop is Long Goodbye. It is 1 and a black for an instant. This spell can be countered and destroy target creature or planeswalker with mana value 3 or less. Now, this is literally just eliminate, but it can't be countered. But the updated reminder text of can't be countered kind of gives the game away as to why they printed this. Because this says, this includes the ward ability. Because, as people often forget, ward actually counters your spell. So a card like Abrupt Decay, you can just you can kill a Graveyard Trespasser with Abrupt Decay if your hand is empty. Because you can say, all right, I don't pay the ward cost. And they're like, okay, then the ward happens. And you're like, okay, this card can be countered. It doesn't matter. And then the thing dies. And Long Goodbye is the same. Now, I think that sort of, I mean, it is an upgrade, but it feels like a side grade over Eliminate. I don't think it's suddenly going to make Eliminate the quote-unquote correct 2-mana black removal spell. It's probably still going to be Go for the Throat or any of the other ones that see play. Go for the Throat, Heartless Act, Power Word Kill. I think it's probably still going to be like rotating between those three. I don't think Long Goodbye is going to be part of that conversation because Eliminate hasn't been part of that conversation for a very long time. If we do another War of the Spark and we get a bunch of cheap Planeswalkers that are going to be everywhere, this card's probably pretty good. Now, I've been talking a lot about Pioneer in the end, but this is, I mean, you can do stuff with this in Pioneer, but this is definitely, this card's going to crack open your EDH pod. Hit my microphone there. It is Crime Novelist. It is 2 and a red for a creature, and it's a Goblin Bard. And it says, whenever you sacrifice an artifact, put a 1-1 counter on Crime Novelist and add a red. So this doubles your treasures. Now, of course, we are playing with treasures in Pioneer. There's quite a few treasure cards going around. But the infamous treasure card from in Commander is Dockside Extortionist, which is already a cracked card, and now it's just going to be more cracked. But in other formats, like Pioneer, if you have a free sacrifice artifact for artifacts, which, reminder, Bartholomeo, I think his name is, the Orzhov dude from Lost Caverns of Ixalan, allows you to sacrifice artifacts and creatures. If you have him, and I think it is Animation Module in play, yes. So Animation Module from Kaladesh is a 1-mana artifact, and it says whenever one or more 1/1 counters are placed on a permanent you control, you may pay 1 mana and get a servo. So let's say you already have a servo in play, just easy example. And you go Crime Novelist, and you have Bartholomeo. You sacrifice the token, the servo. That's going to put a 1-1 counter on your Crime Novelist. And it's going to give you a red mana, which you can spend on the trigger from your animation module to make another servo. And now you've got a loop, your crime novelist becomes infinitely large, and you use the last red mana to fling him at your opponent. Like, that's the type of stuff you can do if you have, I don't know, if you have other, if you have two crime novelists in play, now you're doing that, but you're netting a bunch of mana, you can play your entire hand, you know, like, there's a bunch of, as long as they're red cards, there's a bunch of cool stuff you can do with crime novelist and various other cards. So, you know, how is this broken? I don't know, in like 17 ways. Oh god, this card. Krenko's Buzz Crusher. That sounds painful. Two red red for a 4/4 insect thopter. It is an artifact creature with flying and haste. And when it enters the battlefield, for each player, destroy up to one non-basic land that player controls. For each land destroyed this way, they may search your library for a basic land, put them on the battlefield, tapped, shuffle. The only reason why this is noteworthy is because it's land destruction that doesn't counter, which means it works against Lotus Field. Like, that's the Pioneer application. It's a 4-mana sorcery speed card that blows up Lotus Field. I don't think that's good enough, but it could be. It could be a sideboard card for like a big red-ish deck that may just need a turn or two extra to like slap an Embercleave on this next and start hitting for 10 every turn. It's not legendary. That's cool. And in EDH, this is land destruction for every opponent. So it's really great if there's a bunch of like Urborgs and Cabal Coffers and other bullshit going around. Then Krenko's Buzz Crusher is a pretty cool card. Now, next, we have Lamplight Phoenix. One red red for a 3/3 Phoenix with flying, which is when it dies, you may exile it and collect evidence 4. If you do, return it to the battlefield tapped. So if you just have a bunch of shit in your graveyard, this is just, this card just never dies. Obviously, if it actually gets exiled, you don't get to do its thing. But yeah, this just keeps coming back. Cool value-ish card. Maybe some Izzet control deck uses this as like a sticky wing condition or something. Like, that's where I could see it being played. It doesn't end, it can block. It does enter the battlefield tapped, but it can block, so you could just play it and sort of have an infinite blocker, which is why I'm sort of thinking of a control deck where it's like an infinite blocker that eventually becomes a win condition. The next one, I don't really know why I put this card on. now looking back, so let's see if I can convince myself while reading it. It is Krenko, Baron of Tin Street. So two in a red for a 3/3 legendary creature goblin with haste. And it says tap, second artifact, put a 1/1 counter on each goblin you control. And then whenever an artifact is put into a graveyard from play, you may pay red. If you do, create a 1/1 red goblin. It gains haste. At least if you have animation module and your crime novelist, the thing we're talking about just, Krenko means you win because you create infinite goblins. No, actually, because that requires you to have two crime novelists, and at that point, you've already got infinite mana. It can enable itself. Also, putting a 1/1 counter on each goblin you control, use second artifact as the cost. So the goblin that enters is actually a 2/2. Because if you do it with Krenko's ability. So in that way, it's pretty cool. Creatures with haste are generally good. Not too much to say about this card. Again, it's a card I like, but I don't think it's very good. Then we have Analyze the Pollen. So it is one green for a sorcery that says, as an additional cost, you may collect evidence 8. Search your library for a basic land. If evidence was collected, instead search your library for a creature or land. Not basic, any land card. Reveal that card, put it into your hand, and shuffle. I'm immediately thinking Grease Fang with this, because it reminds me of how am I forgetting the name of this card? It is the 1-mana search for a basic, Delirium search for a creature. I have no idea. That was a... that was a WhatsApp warning there. Traverse the Ulvenwald. God damn it. But, well, there goes our PG rating. But, yeah, it reminds me of that card, especially because Collect Evidence 8, it sounds like a lot, but you're playing Greasefang, you're putting a bunch of shit in your graveyard, you can easily hit the Collect Evidence 8 at the point where you would normally try and hit the Delirium, but Delirium is a little bit easier to disrupt with targeted graveyard interaction, and also just like, I've had Greasefang players just not hit Delirium, right? They mill a bunch of their deck and they just haven't hit Delirium yet. But once you've milled 15 cards, you've definitely hit 8 evidence. So I think this is a really good card. Not just in this, in Greasefang. I know I always bring it up and it's never been good. But in ramp style effects, right, you want to hit your land drops early. Because if you don't hit your land drops, then ramp spells become kind of useless. Right, if you cast a rampant growth but you don't make a land drop, it's basically like you didn't... That may as well have just been a basic. And that's where I think Analyze the Pollen could come in. Early game, it gets you your ramp. Later in the game, it gets you your payoff. Early game, it makes sure your land drops. But then later, you just, like, go... I'm thinking, like, if you go, like, a Cultivate on turn 3, and you then play an Hour of Revelation on turn 5, and you grab, like, two, you know, Eldrazi... what is it? Like, the Shrine of the Forsaken Gods, right? And then on turn 5, would that be? You... Unless you've had an Elfin player or an Arboreal Grazer. Well, this was actually just a deck, like, early on in Pioneer. Just, like, this mono-green. It was, like, this Worldbreaker, Nissa's Pilgrimage, Arboreal Grazer, like, 30 lands deck. And now you can have Analyze the Pollen to make sure you hit your land drops. But later on in the game, you can just exile your ramp spells from your graveyard that now no longer have use, of course, and then grab your Worldbreaker, or grab your Ulamog, or grab your Emrakul, or whatever other card, creature card you're looking for. Then we have Archdruid's Charm. Green, green, green for an instant. Choose one. Search your library for a creature or land and reveal it. Put it on the battlefield if it's a land. Otherwise, put it into your hand. Then shuffle. Again, it says land, not basic land. You can grab a Lotus Field with this. Or you can grab a Shrine of Forsaken Gods with this. You can grab an Ursa's Land with this. You can grab a Cabal Coffers with this if you're talking about Commander. The second option, is put a 1-1 counter on target creature you control. It deals damage to its power to target creature you don't control. And the third one is exile target artifact or enchantment. So this is... It's weird because it's a mono-green charm, right? And mono-green... Well, mono-green, but your deck has to be very green for this card to be good because it's triple green. Obviously, much easier to enable in Modern. Easier to enable in EDH if you've splashed some money on your mana base and you own some fetches. But generally, you need to be pretty hard into green for this card to be consistent. But it sort of ticks the boxes of a charm, right? Ramp is pretty good. It's removal. It's like creature removal. It's non-creature removal. Obviously not planeswalkers. Yeah, just a pretty good card. I can see people do something funny with this. Like they build some... I mean, it's also just 3 mana for a creature tutor, which isn't bad, right? We have a bunch of 3 mana creature tutors, but this is an instant. It does more than just tutor. Yeah, just a pretty cool card. Next up is Case of the Locked Hot House. That sounds like my home in summer. 3 and a green. You may play an additional land on each of your turns. Yes, this is another ramp card. To solve, you control 7 or more lands. And again, you only solve on your end step, so that's the real bummer here. But once it is solved, you may look at the top card of your library anytime, and you may play land cards and cast creatures and enchantments from the top of your library. Especially enchantments is really cool. So if you find another Case of the Locked Hot House, or if you find... Oh, we were talking about... A few sets ago, I had it on the list. It was this Read Ahead Saga that I thought would work well on a ramp deck. And this can do that too. This can cast that too because it's creatures, lands, and enchantments. So it helps you ramp, right? Because making additional land drops is ramp. Obviously not ideal because it starts to come from your hand, but hey, maybe you have like a Corsair of Crucifix or something in play, so you can even play some lands at the top. And once you've solved it, you're golden. And now you just start barfing the top of your library into play, especially because this card stays in play, so, and it stacks. So once you have a discard in the play, and maybe an Azusa, or another case of the Locked House, then, hold on one moment, I keep getting these annoying warnings, there you go. Once you have those in play, you can just sort of start storming off the top of your library. And also, solving this card isn't very hard, right? You play this on 4, make an additional land, now you've got 5. Next turn, you make 2 land drops, there you go, 7. Next turn, you're good. Next up, we have Chalk Outline, an enchantment, 3 and a green. Whenever one or more creature cards leave your graveyard, create a 2/2 white and blue detective token, then investigate. This card is obviously pretty good with Oval Chase Daredevil, so it gives it can quote unquote combo with that. You would need a discard outlet, because if you, for the people who don't know, Oval Chase? That sounds like a weird name for a card. It is 3 and a black for a 4/2 human pilot, and when an artifact enters the battlefield under your control, return this card from your graveyard to your hand. So, if you have a discard outlet in play, let's say you get an enchantment in whatever way, Overchase Daredevil will trigger. You will have it go back into your hand, which counts as Choke Outline seeing a creature leave the graveyard. So it triggers. Now, before that trigger resolves, you discard your Overchase Daredevil. Now the Choke Outline trigger resolves, you get a clue. Now Oval Chase Daredevil triggers. You pick that up, Choke Outline triggers, before you let Choke Outline resolve, discard Oval Chase Daredevil, and now you have infinite clues, infinite detectives, you're good. Can be done at instant speed, so maybe you can catch your opponent off guard with it, somehow. They could probably see it coming, but at least what you can do is if you have your discard outlet and Choke Outline in play, you could wait till your opponent's end step, do your combo, get your detectives, and they effectively have haste. You could also just have a way to give your cards haste. I don't know how my screen recorder has worked, but I just got a text from my father-in-law, so I hope that didn't pop up on the screen. Oh dear, he's ringing me. Interruption, I'll pause the recording. And after that brief interruption, we're back. So let's talk about the card Chalk Outline. This is going to sound really disjointed for everyone listening. Again, I have no editing skills, so it's just going to have to be one take. So Chalk Outline with Oval Chase Daredevil can make for like a really interesting value-y combo. I'm sure there's much more you can do with this, because just having a creature leave your graveyard, not super hard. And getting a 2/2 detective and investigating, like, this card really quickly pays for itself if you're trying to do something fair with this, right? You get, like, 2 triggers out of this. It's 2/2s and 2 clues, which is pretty good already. You get 3 out of this, it's kind of good. You get 4 or 5 triggers, it's kind of absurd. It's not legendary, so it stacks, right? So in that way, Chalk Outline is just a very powerful card, but it is very slow. Like, if you're managing to set up some combo, we're still talking like 2-3 card combos that don't win the game outright. So it's a little bit hard to see this card actually seeing a lot of play. But I think there's a cool deck to be built here. There's this also like, you know, and just thinking of different ways to trigger it, right? You could play this in some sort of Golgari shell and just have, like, your I mean, if you collect evidence, this works. If you grave your trespasser and just target your own graveyard and exile one of your creatures from there. If you have like a scrap heap scrounger, or if we're talking about other formats, you know, obviously I'm talking about like very convoluted ways to get this Oval Chase Daredevil stuff. But in Modern, we've been doing this forever with Underworld Cookbook, right? And it's a really easy way to trigger your Oval Chase Daredevil. Just that's not a combo because it's not infinite. It's more that you get more value out of that. But that could be fine for an EDH deck. I'm now thinking, in EDH, you've got, I think it's Baba Yaga. It's like a Golgari deck that wants you to sacrifice three permanents. And I believe you get a bonus if there are three different permanent types. Now, if you have Chalk Outline, Underworld Cookbook, and Oval Chase Daredevil, you already get a food, a clue, and a creature. So that is only two types, right? You've got an artifact, and a creature. But maybe now it's like there's some other card I'm not thinking about that now makes it really easy to add like a third type to that. And once you're doing, maybe there's some recurrable enchantment or something. Obviously not the Chalk Outline itself. You don't want to do that. But now it becomes really easy to trigger, but I think it's Baba Yaga. Is it Baba Yaga or am I just completely off? Similar enough. Baba Lisaga. Okay. Yeah, they need to be three different card types, so these obviously aren't, but hey, there you go. At least there's an easy way to get multiple. Again, that's also just means you just get a bunch of shit in play. Which is fine. And this also works with other cards, by the way, and I'm thinking of Bloodghast. What are some other cards? What's the card that sees play in Vintage that only gets reanimated if it's like the top card of your graveyard? Whatever, that's niche. But there's a bunch of different stuff you can do to get this card to give you a lot of value in different formats. And it's a very interesting, cool card. And I also want to say that I like that Magic's is like, I always talk about like 2018 Magic, where like in 2018 Magic, this card would probably be kind of cracked. Like this would have probably been a ridiculous card in Standard, especially because in 2018, it would have been in Standard with Oval Chase Daredevil. But even without that, kind of a crazy card, but Magic has moved far beyond that and has become more powerful. And because we're not going to ban 90% of all cards printed nowadays, I'm glad to see these sort of like in a vacuum ridiculous value cards, knowing that really they're not going to see play anyway, right? It's the same with like a card like Deduce, where like, you know, that card may have been really good back then, but now they've sort of started to realize that like, hey, maybe our instant and sorceries can be better. Spoiler alert, there's a power creeped mana leak in this set. It's an Azorius card, but you know, you could argue, wouldn't mana leak already be too good? But like, Mana Leak is like a 15-year-old card. Of course we can power creep Mana Leak at this point. And I'm happy to see them do that, right? Quick Study is Divination at instant speed, right? Because which has been like sort of like a staple for a long time. Like it looked like spells-wise, we had these staples and they just never wanted to print cards that are better than these staples. And it seems like they finally realized that these staples are like a decade or two old and we can absolutely print better cards, right? So I hope to see a better Hero's Downfall, maybe see actual Mana Leak reprint, Deduce at one mana, maybe we get Lightning Bolt back because there are some cards you don't want to be better versions of. But I'm just happy that we see them sort of like break these molds every once in a while. And I just hope they do it more often. Because, yeah, if your opponent is some ridiculous combo deck, if you ever want to play a value deck, your value cards have to be ridiculous too. So, you know, I guess we're just speeding towards ridiculous Magic. I just hope this doesn't turn into an arms race. That's one thing I'm worried about. But anyway, before the ramble gets too long, let's move on to Undergrowth Recon. Recon, I think. One green for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, return target land from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. This is it is tapped, but this is really nasty with a card like Field of Ruin. Because it's a, what do you call that? It's a Crucible of Worlds, but it does in a way ramp you. Because it doesn't, it this doesn't say that your land drop is from your graveyard. You just get an extra land and it's from your graveyard. And I think that's what makes Undergrowth Recon like a really interesting card. In EDH, you could do funny things like with this. Like, I think there's that K from Ixalan that turns into a copy of a card into your graveyard. So let's say you play that and copy the Cabal Coffers that's in your graveyard. And then in your next upkeep, you just get the Cabal Coffers that is in your graveyard back. Like, there's fun stuff you can do with that. You can recur Demolition Field. You can recur Wasteland. If we're talking about EDH, or because I think this is too much stuff to do with like spelunking in Pioneer, but maybe with spelunking in EDH or with Amulet of Figure in Modern, you can make it so these cards actually enter untapped. So perhaps you can do something really nasty with that, like Wasteland lock your opponent out of the game. Now we have, this card is so fucking cool. Unzrag, the Quake Mole. So it is 4 mana for an 8-4. For a legendary creature, Mole God. It is 2 red and a green, because of course it's a gruel card. Whenever Unzrag, the Quake Mole, becomes blocked, untap each creature you control. After this combat phase, there is an additional combat phase. So you're kind of encouraged to have this 8 drop hit you, except 3 red, red, green, green, so 7 mana. It's obviously a shit ton of mana, but for an activated ability, Unzrag must be blocked this turn if able. Now he's an 8-4, so he can die pretty quickly, but you can buff him, you can make him indestructible. The funniest thing is to make Unzrag and a creature your opponent controls indestructible, which means that's a very convoluted way to get infinite combats. But I just think this card is really big, it is really cool, it's fairly cheap. In the sense that, like, this is much more of an EDH card. I don't see this seeing play anywhere else. But in EDH, I think it's very cool. It's high power for low mana, which means it can trigger a bunch of synergies in that way. I think I'm definitely going to put this in my IL deck if I ever pull this. Because it's a mythic, it's kind of a cool card. It's probably going to be $20 for the first half a year, but once it's cheap, I'll probably pick it up. Now one of my favorite cards in the set. We entered a multicolored part of the set, and it is Drag the Canal. So this is a blue and a black for an instant. Create a 2/2 white and blue detective creature token. If a creature dies this turn, you gain 2 life, surveil 2, then investigate. Which is a lot. Now, a creature dying isn't nothing, right? Obviously, if you're in a Dimir deck, you want to play removal. You may have some of your own creatures. You could cycle a Shark Typhoon for 0. There's ways to have a creature die, but it's obviously not, like, it's not free to the way that you should read this card with its whole text all the time. But 2 mana for a 2/2 flash, effectively, is, like, bad, but not completely unusable. And if you, hold up, interruption. There may be another interruption, live calls. But Drag the Canal. So a 2-mana 2/2 flash is not horrendous. It's not good, but it's not horrendous, right? Like, you know, in a typical control fashion, you definitely sometimes just win with a shitter with flash, right? That's not a uncommon strategy in a control deck. But if a creature dies, gaining 2 life, not bad, decent against aggro. Surveil 2 is very good. And then investigate, that's just gravy, right? Like 4 mana, it's obviously broken up, but 4 mana, make a 2/2, gain 2 life, surveil 2, and draw a card. That's pretty good, right? Also, it is a creature, but the card is an instant, and that can sometimes be relevant when, like, sometimes you want to just have a deck that's as instant and sorcery dense as possible. Like I talked about with the Deuce too, this is a control-ish card that puts a bunch of poop on the battlefield. You get this detective token, you get this clue, you can sack them to bargain, you can sack them to other cards, like, you know, you can interact with cards that say, like, for every permanent you have or something like that. And yeah, so again, it allows you to play that game. So a card I am personally very happy to see, and I'm definitely going to try and probably fail, but hey, you know, you never know. Next up is Gleaming Geardrake. It is one and a red for a 1/1 flying artifact creature Drake. When it enters the battlefield, investigate. When you sacrifice an artifact, put a 1/1 counter on this. I don't know if this card is good enough. You can kind of read it as a 4-mana 2/2 flyer that draws you a card, which is not a good card. I wouldn't pay one more mana for a Winged Drake if it drew me a card. But sacrificing artifacts, especially when we're talking like treasure tokens, treasure tokens, blood tokens, like cheap things to sacrifice, when you have that card we talked about earlier, the sort of investigator that makes clues whenever you cast artifacts. If you have that card in play, your sacrifices are even cheaper now. You can sacrifice clues too, and this can just be really big really quickly. Especially again, that's more EDH, but like, you play this card, you play your Dockside Extortionist, you sack 3 clues, you play your Crime Novelist, you sack the rest of your clues, you have a billion mana, this card is a 10/10, right? Like, those are all like cool things you can do with this card. So I don't think this card is particularly great. I do think this card can like randomly one-shot people if they don't deal with it. And that kind of card is always kind of interesting janky to me. All right. I really hope all these pools aren't going to fuck up my recording, otherwise I'm going to be really mad. So Gleaming Geardrake, pretty cool card. Again, just lands into the, like, piqued my curiosity, but I don't think this card is going to be, like, great. This card definitely piqued my curiosity. It is Ill-Timed Explosion. So 2 blue-red sorcery. Draw 2 cards, then you may discard 2 cards. When you do, Ill-Timed Explosion deals X damage to each creature, where X is the greatest mana value among cards discarded this way. So again, greatest, it doesn't add them up, right? Two counter spells don't make a 4-mana sweeper. However, what I think is really interesting about this card is this feels like a way that you could put more board wipes in your deck, but if you're in a slow matchup, you don't get punished for it, because you could just, you can basically quote-unquote cycle this. Also, we're talking about Pioneer. This is a format that does have cards like Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise, which, you know, if you draw this card, if you play this card, draw 2 cards and discard a Dig Through Time and do 8 damage to everything, that's basically a Wrath of God. So obviously the big downside here is you need to discard spells to deal damage, at least one spell. And what really sucks about this card is that it's a board wipe that is inconsistent. Because if you top deck this board wipe and you cast it and you draw 2 lands, you didn't actually draw a board wipe. So that makes me hesitant about this card. I was immediately thinking this for Grixis Control because it is a 4-mana board wipe, and that's a thing that's kind of rare. But a 4-mana board wipe, I could see this card happening as like I run 2... What is it called again? I've got my copies here already. I run like 2 Deadly Cover-Up and then like an Ill-Timed Explosion because I kind of want an extra board wipe, but I kind of don't. Numbers may differ, but like that's a role I can see Ill-Timed Explosion have. Or you just make an Izzet control deck, and this is kind of as close to a Wrath of God you're going to get. You might want to actually kind of load up on those Delve spells. You know, maybe you're playing an Izzet control deck and you're running like 4 Dig Through Times and a Treasure Cruise, right? And you find a way to discard it. Dig Through Time is fine if you discard them. You can do like some Magma Opus stuff. But Magma Opus is also just a good card to discard to this, right? So you build an Izzet control deck with like Gearhulk, Magma Opus, Dig Through Time, and then Ill-Timed Explosion is just very often going to be a 4-mana Damnation. Now that I think about it, that deck sounds fucking awesome. I might have to build that. I just need to order more, like, Spire Bluff Canals and stuff, and shit's expensive. But Yeah, now that I think about it, this is a really awesome card for an Izzet control deck. Like, doing the Magma, Opus, Torrential Gearhulk stuff was already cool. This is a really great addition to a deck like that. Now, this is a quirky one. It's Insidious Roots. It is an enchantment, black and a green, and it says, creature tokens you control have tap, add one mana of any color, and whenever one or more creature cards leave your graveyard, create a 0/1 green plant creature token, then put a 1/1 counter on each plant you control. So you better get your fucking dice out here, because you're going to need 1,000 when you play this card, especially in DH. I mean, we were just talking earlier about like a about a loop with what was it? The green enchantment. I forgot the name. It's Chalk Outline. With Chalk Outline and Oval Chase Daredevil. Well, if you are doing that loop, you now also get infinite plants. Now, that's already a loop that gives you infinite detectives. So I don't really think you give a shit about having infinite plants. But there's obviously many other ways to do this. And when you're building that deck, I don't know, in EDH or Modern, you're running it with like Bloodgast or... it's the same trigger. So all the things I said about Chalk Outline also apply to Insidious Roots, but this enchantment is 2 mana. Now, it doesn't trigger the Oval Chase Daredevil loop, because it doesn't create an artifact. It creates a plant creature. But all the other stuff, like how to get this card to trigger, applies to the same thing, but this card is much cheaper, which makes it more likely to be competitive in... I mean, you're like, if you're doing like Cat Oven, right? Now, Cat Oven also works with the other card. So if you Cat Oven with Insidious Roots, that is a much cheaper way than if you Cat Oven with Chalk Outline. Now, Chalk Outline is more powerful, but obviously... Well, it doesn't have to be more powerful, because all your creature tokens tapping for mana is kind of sick too, right? You know, you have your Cat Oven, and then you play this, and you make a bunch of plants, and they all tap for mana. Maybe you play this with Chalk Outline in the same deck, and you've already made a bunch of detectives, and now you play this card, and it's basically free, because you just tap the detectives for mana. So, there's a bunch of cool stuff to do with this card. You can do something quirky with this in Pioneer and Modern. I think this is a very good EDH card. There's plenty of token strategies in EDH. Having one or more cards leave your graveyard is also trivial in EDH, because the card pool of cards you have to do it with is really great. Yeah, cool card. Strong card. Fucking hell, this card. If I made a top 10, I may have put this at number 1. It's Leyline of the... But I hadn't put that much thought into it, so don't shoot me over my opinion, please. Don't shoot me in general, please. That'd be kind. Leyline of the Guild Pact. So this is a fucking nightmare of a mana cost. So it's a Celestnia hybrid, a Simic hybrid, a Golgari hybrid, or a Gruul hybrid. For all intents and purposes, 4 green mana. Enchantment. If Leyline of the Guild Pact is in your opening hand, you may begin the game with it on the battlefield. You could stop reading here, but each non-land permanent you control is all colors, and lands you control are every basic land type in addition to their other types. This is just a mono green card. This is just when Pioneer was new. Now this card obviously has other applications too, but when Pioneer was new, Leyline of Abundance got banned because it was too good in mono green. Because if you started the game with a Leyline of Abundance in play, you had a bunch of free devotion, so your Nykthoses were like super powerful. So you could go like 1 mana elf. I think in the first versus life, Rosmarion played like a 26-26 Hydroid Krasis on like turn 3. And Devotion's decks have become more powerful and much better built. For example, the shit that Ross did there was without Kiora. So now imagine that same stuff, but your ley line gives 4 devotion instead of 2 devotion. Right, if you start the game with a ley line in play, you go a turn 1 elf, your opponent doesn't kill it, they go Nykthos, tap it, 5 green mana, and you're facing down like a turn 2 Cavalier. Your opponent has turn one Leyline, an elf, and Nykthos. Now, don't kill the elf is no longer an issue. Not killing the elf on turn one means you've just lost the game. And do this with multiple Leylines, and it's not even funny anymore. Right? It's bonkers. It's completely bonkers. Leyline of the Guild Pact. And again, just because it provides Port of Ocean. Each non-land permanent you controls all colors is actually a downside. what I could see happening in a very strange world is that mono-green with Leyline of the Guild Pact is so good that you actually just board in Rending Volley. You're playing against a mono-green deck, and you're boarding in a card that says deal 4 damage to a blue or a white creature. Because your opponent plays their Llanowar Elf, and now you have... Like, I'm thinking, like, my current build of Grixis. This is dated, right? I haven't updated in a while. That has 2 Rending Volley in the sideboard. So, what I would do is I would have 4 Fatal Push, 4 Thoughtseize for Mono Green. It's like turn one plays. What I could do, and that's basically 8 one mana interaction spells, but really 4 one mana removals. Actually, I think I've got a Torch the Tower in the board, so I can board up to 5. But if I'm against Mono Green and they're doing this bullshit, I may just have to be like, I need more. I need 7 one mana removal spells. It's in a similar vein that decks that ran Ray of Enfeeblement, which I think it's Ray of Enfeeblement. 1 black, give a creature, -4/-1 if the creature is black. I think they hate it on themselves, that cycle. No, I think it's white, yeah. If the creature is white, give it -4/-4 instead. Mindful because it killed Greasefang and Adeline. So it definitely hated on white creatures. People boarded it in against Mono Green because it gave -4/-1, which means you could kill a Llanowar Elf with it on turn one. So for the sake of the turn one kill the Llanowar Elf play and no other point in the game, because it was bad in every other point in the game, but at that point in the game, it was a one mana play, so it was Fatal Push like 5 through 8, whichever mana copies you run. Probably not 4, but it could be Fatal Push 5 through 8. You might just start having to board like that with your Rending Volleys and stuff just to deal with Llanowar Elf. Now, I don't know if it's going to be... In my head, this is broken, right? Like, in my head, this card is going to be in the BNR in a few weeks. But I don't know for sure because I've just not been engaged enough. And that really bothers me. And I know we're over an hour in. So it's a bit random to start doing an apology, but like I do feel really sorry for that, where I already wasn't as engaged with Magic for like a few months. I kept up with it, I watched content on it, but like I've been to like 2 or 3 non-EDH events since like July, right? So I've just not engaged with the game personally as much. Like I haven't cast a lot of spells. And I hope to pick that up again a bit because I feel like it makes my analysis better. Because sometimes I feel like I'm a little bit shooting off at the hip and I don't really like that. So I hope to be able to improve that too as a sort of like a New Year's resolution, I suppose. I haven't been engaged enough. That's also why I'm a little bit more comfortable making this format of video and not a top 10. But gut feeling, if I made a top 10, this was number one. So, next card. Oh my god! It's Lightning Helix. Sorry, I didn't do delivery as well. This card, red and a white, instant, deal 3 damage to any target, you gain 3 life. This is a classic of Magic. This is reprinted in the Pioneer. No other format I have anything to say about it. I don't play fucking Standard. It's not a good card for EDH. Except there's that one... the box topper for Dominaria. Lightning Helix is good in that deck. Other than that, shit in EDH. Is it called Fire Song and Sunspeaker? I'm pretty sure it is. Anyway, Lightning Helix, really good card. I just don't really see where it goes. So Boros Burn hasn't been a thing in a while. Basically, since Lurrus was banned, Boros Burn has not been a deck. And even though Lightning Helix is good, I don't see Lightning Helix being the card that brings it back. So I'm a little bit worried about the prospects in a Burn deck. I just don't really think it's going to make the cut. Well, it would make the cut in a Boros Burn deck. I just don't think Boros Burn is a very good deck. Because I don't think sometimes gaining 3 life is going to make your Burn deck better. Because I feel like the problem is usually your opponent gaining 1,000 life from putting a Shieldred in play and having a Fable of the Mirror Breaker. That's what killed aggro. And not the fact that they died too fast themselves. And another staple that is, well, discard, another deck that is used to be staple is Jeskai Control in Modern. And I don't see Jeskai Control being a thing in Pioneer either. Like, why not just play blue-white? Like, is making your mana base worth it to sometimes gain 3 life of a removal spell? I don't think so. And also, we have to judge that on, that was in Modern, and we were already, I feel like the cards in Pioneer are a little slower and a little chunkier. So if we think like Modern when that deck was good, it was killing, I mean, Thalia would always be a problem because it's inefficient, but it would be killing Thalias and Dark Confidants and maybe Bloodbraid Elves, but I may be getting the era wrong, and opposing Snapcaster Mages and then Kitchen Sphinxes and, well, Devoted Druid was probably the card you should be killing in that deck. If that was the version of the deck that ran Kitchen Sphinx, there were more. But that's the cards you were killing. So, in many ways, Lightning Helix was 2 mana, destroy target creature, gain 3 life. It is absolutely not that in the context of Pioneer. So, is making your mana base worse? Also, keep in mind that since, like, Jeskai Control was a good deck in Modern, since then, we've had so many good utility lands and man, you know, we had the castles, we had the D&D man lands. Like, we've had all these great lands that encourage you to stay in 3 colors, stay in 2 colors, or if you're 3 colors, to only dip lightly into that 3rd color. I'm not saying you can't play a 3 or 4 or 5 color deck, but I'm just saying, like, the mana base, especially from a control deck, kind of encourages you to do that, at least in Pioneer. So I just don't really think that building Jeskai Control is worth it at all. Also, because in Modern, this card is pretty fucking good with Snapcaster Mage. We don't have Snapcaster Mage. This card is not good with Torrential Gearhold. So that is important to keep in mind. At one point, Pioneer's power level is going to be high enough that we're going to have Lightning Helix, Lightning Bolt, and Snapcaster Mage in the format. At least I fucking hope so. At that point, Lightning Helix in the Jeskai Control shell, probably pretty good. But until that day, probably a very powerful card with a lot of history behind it that's just not going to see play at all. I think even in Standard, this is not going to be very good, but I don't know anything about it. Now, the people who are watching it on the screen can already see the next card coming. I have hardly ever been more angry at a card, and it is No More Lies, except it doesn't have an exclamation point, but it should have. Blue and a white for an instant. Counter target spell unless its controller pays 3. If that spell is countered this way, exile it instead of putting it to its owner's graveyard. So mana leak is apparently not okay, except when it's in blue-white control, and then we'll make a better mana leak. Like, this card just pisses me off. Also, because people say, like, well, exile is white. Counterspells that exile has been a blue thing since, like, 1998. So don't give me that. Like, this card could have absolutely been mono-blue. Right? This is one of those cards, again, that needlessly has an extra color attached, and for some fucking reason, whenever we needlessly attach colors to cards, it is blue cards becoming Azorius cards. Right? Like, in theory, Dovin's Veto doesn't have to be as Dovin's Veto, another blue and white counterspell from Ravnica, doesn't have to be an Azorius card either. But it is, right? It's negate, but better. No More Lies is mana leak, but better, so it's in more colors. And I know people are like, well, the power is what you get from being in more colors. And then I just kind of wish that they did this for Dimir cards too, or Izzet cards. But it seems to be only... Sorry, I'm ranting. It seems to be that they only do this for blue-white control cards. Like, power analysis, this card's fucking ridiculous. Like, this card is so fucking good. It is unbelievable how good this is for blue-white control. This will be a 4-off in blue-white control until... Well, maybe I'm over. Maybe it's a 3-off. Rarely a 3-off. Probably a 4-off in blue-white control decks until Pioneer as a format ceases to exist. This card is unreal with how good it is. I've been like... Ever since I've decided to put Quench, basically... fuck is the card called... Make Disappear. Ever since I put Make Disappear in the deck, I've been impressed with, like, man, counter unless they pay 2 is actually kind of good. But counter unless they pay 3 is just actually kind of cracked. Like, the... Especially because what I said earlier with Lightning Helix is that a lot of threats in Pioneer, obviously not all of them, but a lot of threats in Pioneer are a little slower, but a little chunkier. Right? In Modern, we were often looking at 1 and 2 mana cards, like this 2018 Modern kind of era. There were bigger cards there too, of course. But, no, people were casting fucking Siege Rhinos in 2018. Can you believe that? But, for a large part, the threats were a little smaller and more efficient. That's why Fatal Push was so good, because it basically killed everything in Modern. Also because it could go up to 4. But even without Revolting, Fatal Push basically killed everything in Modern. That may not be true. But, anyway, what I'm trying to get at without rambling too much more is that counter unless you pay 3 is almost impossible to play around. The number is just too large. You're not going to wait till 8 mana to play your Teferi. You're not going to wait till 8 mana to play your Creativity. You're not going to wait till turn 7 to play your Shieldred. You're just not doing it, right? You're just gonna let them have it. And sometimes they have it. And that's where No More Lies is just, like, kind of just too good. Because of the Exile Clause that is on it. So now your Stormna Festival is fucked. Your Grease Fang is fucked. Because there's quite a few strategies. Your Kroxa is fucked, right? There's quite a few strategies in Pioneer where you get to think, well, if my card gets countered, it's in the graveyard, and I can still do something with it while it's in the graveyard. But No More Lies exiles the card as well. At least give me mana leak now, right? You can have your fucking Strictly Banner mana leak. I've been dealing for, at this point, I've been dealing for 6 years with blue-white having better negate, right? I fucking hate it, but I'll deal with it. But if you guys get Strictly Banner mana leak, at least let me have mana leak, for crying out loud. So yeah, this card just pisses me off. Also, because we keep getting these really good control cards, and they're, like, specifically Azorius cards. I mean, think every Teferi ever, basically. But, like, I mean, Hero of Dominaria is the main one that sees play. Because the 3-mana Teferi is banned, right? But we see all these Azorius-specific tools, and it really pushes this idea, I feel like, from Wizards' point of view, that if you're not playing... If you're playing control, you are playing Azorius, right? Because I know people hate playing against control, especially casual players hate playing against control. So it feels like they want to shove control into one corner so that the player base can either learn to deal with that corner, or they will just encounter that corner more. Like, if we think of, like, Magic and the decks you encounter being a room, control used to be, like, a quarter or half the room, depending on the meta. But the way these cards are being designed, they're trying to make control a corner, so that if you randomly walk around the room, you're less likely to bump into that corner. Which I just hate, because it really doesn't promote deck diversity. If you make the sort of, if you make more monocolored cards, or especially if you make cards monocolored more often when their rules text allows them to be monocolored, right? If this card said you gain three instead of, that would have been bonkers too. But let's say instead of the exile clause, it said you gain two life. Right? It feels a bit stapled on, but rules text-wise, that is an Azorius card, maybe a Simic card. But it's not an Izzet card, it is not a Dimir card, it's not a mono-blue card. It makes sense, right? You're getting something like sort of like mechanically unique out of the color combination you're picking. This just feels like, at a point, I'm going to be playing a deck that feels like a mono-blue deck, but for some reason I'm forced to play white card, white mana. So white lands. In order to make it work. But it's like, but what if I want to play Grixis? What if I want to play, if I want to play Sultai Control or stuff? Well, can't fucking do that because all the good cards are both blue and white. Right? And if you want to have really good universal removal, you also have to be a mono white nowadays. So that, this is just pissing me off about it. Just, dude, you can now play Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, and you can plus it, and you can hold up either No More Lies or whatever the, is it Get Lost? From Ixalan, play Teferi, plus hold up either No More Lies, or either hold up the best 2-mana counter spell, or hold up the best 2-mana removal spell. And I know best, they get map tokens, they can probably do something with it. The thing is that you're very good at defending Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, and when that card stays in turn for more than in play for more than 3 turns, you have just lost the game. Anyway, I think it's been 10 minutes. So let's wrap this thing up with 3 more cards to go. But these are a lot shorter, I'm sure. I'm going to have to turn this one because I can't read sideways. Split card, push and pull. Push is 1 for 1 and Orzhov. Destroy a target tapped creature as a sorcery. Kind of bad. Pull, 4 Rakdos Rakdos. Return up to 2 target creature cards from a single graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. They gain haste, sacrifice them in the beginning of the next end step. I mean, first for starters, this is a mono-red reanimation spell. You don't need to be in black to have a reanimation spell. Now, I know it's only until the end of the turn, but they gain haste. It's 2 creatures. So you can just do some A plus B garbage here, right? I know you may as well just creativity them off the top of your deck, but like an easy one is just Xenagos Worldspine Worm. Or whatever the Investigator Sphinx thing is we talked about earlier with Collect Evidence 10. That and your troll that allows you to discard for free. Hey, cool, it's A plus B. I have the A plus B for 6 mana. Instead of that troll and the Sphinx would be 9 mana. And if I'm already playing a bunch of cards that mill me and make me discard, I'm kind of happy to see, to have a card that pulls A plus B for my graveyard. You can do Ilharg and some other big creature, and then you drop in your third big creature. You could just get a pair of Eldrazi. Like, there's the fact that you can do like a sort of double Gorios Vengeance. I know 6 mana is a lot, but pulling 2 creatures out of your graveyard and gaining them haste, I'm sure allows for a trillion A plus B equals I win kind of combos. And setting yourself up to go 6 mana, I win, is just very powerful. And Bush is a pretty bad card, but it's not an unplayable card, right? If you're flooding on your reanimation spell, Bush is probably one of the best cards to have on the other end of it. Obviously, you would wish Bush was a more powerful card, right? This could have been like Murder, but like, which is just more consistent. But like, this is a perfectly fine card, especially if you're playing a A plus B combo reanimator kind of deck. The way your opponent stops that is just by killing you before you do it. So having a removal spell stapled onto this is like ideal. Like, the only thing that could have been better is, like, a fog, right? But this card's just great. It sets up for A plus B combos. It protects your A plus B combos. You can very confidently put four copies of this in the deck. Getting two creatures. Hey, also they sacrifice. There's a bunch of cards that do stuff when they die, right? So you can also just be very happy to literally pull two cards out of your graveyard, move to end step, and your opponent blows up, right? There's a lot of stuff you can do with pull, and push being the fatal push, right? You now have to say, I push your card. And you may not be talking about Fatal Push. But that is just super powerful and super cool. Then we have Branch of Vitugazi. This one's pretty easy. It is a land. Taps for a colorless. It has Disguise 3. Now, this is actually the first time I'm talking about Disguise. Disguise is literally Morph. But the Morph has Ward 2. That's it. It is the exact same card. The exact same thing as Morph. It's Morph, but the token has Ward 2. Well, the token, but the face-down card has Morph 2. Other than that, it's Morph. It is literally Morph. So, land, taps for colorless. When it is turned face up, add 2 mana of any one color until end of turn. You don't lose this mana as steps and phases end. So what makes this card interesting is that, first of all, the disguise cost is effectively 1 if you get to combine it with something. But there's this color, I know it's funky, but it's colorless ramp. Because you can play this as a creature and then flip it face up, and it doesn't count as your land drop. Because it is a creature you cast, and then it happens to turn into a land. Now, we're talking... Well, the thing is, though, it's disguise 3, but as long as you make it turn face up untapped, it also just taps for a colorless. So let's say I'm playing this in a control deck, because of course I am, and I go for the disguise, play this, go to my opponent's turn, I flip it face up, I get 2 colored mana, which I will pick 2 blue, and I will tap this for a colorless, and I will Sinister Sabotage my opponent's spell. And I've ramped. And I just think that's really quirky and cool. And there is a card that does this already. I think it's called Zoetic Cave. And I feel like this is just like 1,000 times better than Zoetic Cave. And also the art is really pretty. So I'm just happy to put this in the deck. But you know, sometimes you want to build a control deck and you just want it to go a little bit big. So having like sort of incidental ramp, you know, I could see you just swap a land for a Branch of Vitugazi. Sure, a colorless land, especially if you're playing like a 3-color deck. I'm not saying a colorless land has no cost to it. But if worse comes to worse, it is still an untapped land. Especially if this came in tapped. If you play this as a land and it would come in tapped, this card would be kind of shit. But the fact that you can still play this as an untapped mana source means that the floor is pretty acceptable. And hey, if you top deck this later, turning a land into a 2-2 with War 2 is not the worst thing in the world. The War 2 probably doesn't matter if you do it in a late game, but hey, I draw this land that's useless, I turn it into a 2-2. The other lands that allow you to immediately do something else with them are cycle lands, but they are tapped lands. This is not. So that makes this a very cool card. Last one. I just want to talk about the Surveil lands. So the example I picked is Undercity Sewer, but these exist for, I believe, all 10 colors. It's not a cycle, it's all 10. It's not like a half a cycle like they've done before, it's all 10. So this is Undercity Sewers, land, island, swamp, land types, extremely relevant. Undercity Sewer enters the battlefield tapped. When it enters, Surveil 1. So this is Temples Be Gone, right? I've always talked about how much I hate temples. And it is Temples Be Gone now. They have basic land types, so they work with dual lands. They can be fetched, which is really cool for modern. And Surveil is far better than Scrying. Like, Surveil is so much better than Scrying. Now, my general hatred for tapped lands is still there. But if we're talking modern, let's say you're playing blue-white control modern. Sometimes you just fetch and you just have it enter tapped, right? Because you don't, you tap, you search, you fetch, and you search a Hallowed Fountain and you just make an Ender Tap because you didn't need to do anything with the mana. This happens, right? Or what if you just put one of these in your deck? And when that happens, instead of just getting a tap land and saving you two life, you get to Surveil, which is so much better. So for that card, it's, for that sake, it's great. In Pioneer, I'm really skeptical about these. They have land types. And again, land types is good. It could mean that you can play like an Azorius control deck, but maybe running... what's the card? It's banned in Modern. It's the blue land from Eldraine, and if you control three other islands, it enters untapped and it puts a spell on top of your deck from your graveyard. We all know what I'm talking about. Maybe you can enable that more easily now. There's uses for it, but I'm not super high on it. For Modern, I can see it. But I will say a lot of control decks in Modern nowadays tend to be multicolor decks, like 4-color control, 5-color control. And when they have the opportunity to grab a tapped land, they'll grab a Triome. So they often run like a Triome for when that happens. And that's better than Surveilling, right? Getting your colors, getting your domain is more important than Surveilling. In EDH, I think basically all the ones that are forests are interesting, because there are a bunch of land tutors like Farseek or Ranger's Path that say search your library for a forest, it enters tapped. And the fact that I can now go like Ranger's Path, find the Gruul, and you could already do this with Shocklands, right? But they entered tapped anyway. So sure, you would sometimes grab a forest because you just, you know, you go for Farseek and you grab the Stomping Ground because you just wanted a red and a green mana source, but it would already enter tapped. You could pay two life, but it would still enter tapped. And now with Undercity Sewer, well, or the Gruul equivalent, I could do that, but I could Surveil. And if I go for a Ranger's Path, I get to Surveil one twice now. And I have an EDH deck that really needs forests. So my Mael deck, basically like the strongest card in the deck is Patron of the Orochi, I believe it's called. And it says tap, untap all your untap all green creatures and all forests. And that means that often in the early game, when I am tutoring, I'm grabbing Jetmir's Garden, Temple Garden, those sort of things. And I've had to put the Kaldheim snow duels. And I think I've also put the Dominaria tapped lands with land types in the deck. Just because I need to have all my forest tutors, but I do want to grab my white mana for my board wipes, my red mana for my dragons, right? And the fact that I can now grab those cards, but then get to do a bunch of surveilling, is just like, it's free power. Right, there's a bunch of EDH decks that are going to be powered up for free. And I don't think these cards are going to be super expensive. Maybe for a bit now, because they do seem quite good for standard. But especially when they rotate, I think these cards are going to be pennies, right? Like, Pioneer decks aren't going to be super interested in my thing. Modern decks will occasionally want one. And still, they're tapped lands, so they don't see play in high-power EDH. So it's just in casual EDH that they're going to see play. And this set, it's going to be, it's a Ravnica set. They're generally good to draft. This is going to be drafted. It's going to be open a lot. So the moment this rotates out of standard, all these cards are going to be like $2, right? And you should just pick up one of each. So that's my financial advice for this video. Video, it's technically a video, but I do still treat it as mainly a, you know, a podcast that people may listen to in the car. Maybe I've talked a bit too fast sometimes because I am no longer... Well, no longer. This time, I haven't been hindered by... Hindered? God, I keep using the wrong words. I'm tired. I've had a long day. You know, usually Brad will interrupt me when I'm ranting too long. So yeah, this just concludes Alex's cards he likes in Murder at Karloff Manor. Said it right. Obviously, this was a bit of an experiment... Right, hey, we didn't have time to release content, like our schedules didn't line up and life happened. but we want to put something out, so I've now made like a piece of sort of solo content. Now, I don't want to make solo content in the sense that I much prefer to record with Brad, so I obviously intend to do that whenever I can. But I would like, you know, people to let me know, like, was this something you liked? What did I do wrong? Did I ramble too much? Did I ramble too much and then, you know, lost my breath at the end and I need to have like long pauses to just like have a drink and recover from my minutes long rambles at the same time? I don't know where I get the oxygen from either. Was it just not as entertaining because you missed the synergy? So you're like, I don't mind if someone's like, to be honest, I wouldn't bother with this content if I were you. That's fine. I'm not offended. I'm not easily offended. But I would like to just know, what did people make of it? Did you mind me rambling, etc.? I'm going to repeat the same question. So I'm going to stop now. And I'm going to thank everyone for listening and potentially watching. If there's any feedback also on, you know, did you mind it wasn't edited? Was there visually, for the people who do watch, was there visually something off about it? Let me know. And if I have to do this again another time, I will make sure to improve. So thank you very much for listening again. I'll say it from Brad too. We appreciate you. We love you. And we'll catch you next time.